abstract. It's grounded. It's lived. It's shaped by classrooms, council chambers, courtrooms, kitchens, and communities. It's worth saying clearly that women continue to carry the disproportionate share of that responsibility, often while navigating systems that weren't built with them in mind. Women in public service lead with preparation, resilience, and care. The balance of policy and people lies there. I want to thank my guests, including Ricardo Moreno, who came to us directly from Caracas, Venezuela. And I thank you for listening. My engineer, Sly Rivers, Nella Barbara, who might have been outdone today by Mama Stella and the tacos. And I'm your host, Dino. Thank you very much. Stay tuned for The Car Show.
And we have a quick news update before we go to The Car Show. The United States has forcibly captured Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and his wife during a U.S. military operation in the nation's capital. That's the Venezuelan capital of Caracas. President Trump posted a photo on social media showing Maduro wearing a sweatsuit, handcuffs, and a blindfold. The announcement comes after what the administration described as a large-scale strike in Venezuela earlier Saturday. The United Nations has condemned the operation, saying it's a deeply alarmed and called the escalation a violation of international law. Trump says his administration is now considering its next steps for Venezuela and claims that the United States will now oversee Venezuela and its oil sector. Trump added that the U.S. intends to sell Venezuelan oil abroad, saying the United States is, quote, in the business of oil. And you are listening to KPFK Los Angeles, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles.
$10 might seem like a small amount, but when you sign up as a KPFK Sustainer Circle member, that $10 helps pay for daily broadcast of Democracy Now!, the Tom Hartman Program, and all of the news and information you hear on KPFK. You get a lot for your monthly contribution, and we need that gift right now to keep bringing you all of the programs you count on. $10 makes a big impact. We combine it with contributions from your fellow listeners who rely on KPFK as much as you do. Public radio only works with you. This is Kathy Diaz, the Monday host of The Global Village, encouraging you to contribute now. Go to kpfk.org, then click Sustainer Circle. Whatever you can do, please do. Thank you.
From the icy cold curves of Angeles Crest to the sunny shores of PCH and around the world on kpfk.org, this is The Car Show, broadcasting every Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. here on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles for over 52 years. Coming up on 53 next month, it'll be 53. I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn of AutoWeek.com. Go to that website. Click on all my stories, just my stories. Put nice comments at the end, please. I am joined this week and every week by my favorite co-host in the world, an attorney specializing in automotive law, Motor Press Guild member, and owner of two Mazdas, a Miata and an RX-8, Michelle Spencer. Welcome, Michelle.
Hey, Mark. I'm glad to be back on air with you this week, and I missed you guys while I was in Motor City.
You were. Maybe you can tell us some stories later on. Normally, we are joined by our friend Carl Brower, but I think he has completely forgotten that he is on this show at all. And if you see Carl out there somewhere, you know, tell him to give us a call or something. We have, not instead of, but we are honored to have joining us this week all the way from Chicago. You know him as the author of the Last Open Road series of books. Maybe you even loaned him a race car once. Please welcome racer, writer, and raconteur Bert B.S. Levy. Welcome, Bert.
Hey, pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure to be in California. It's very cold and snowy in the Midwest right now.
Yeah.
Well, it's cold and rainy here. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's not nearly as cold as the Midwest, hon.
That's true. That's true.
Not even close.
The temperature plunged below 68 degrees here in L.A. They have opened the shelters. They are advising you to stay home near the heater, on the floor by the vent, and slurp in that warm air.
Believe
we will
not,
get through.
I went out for a bike ride this morning, and it wasn't that cold, but it was a bit moist. Not really what I expected.
That's the worst that we have here, maybe, is a bit
yeah,
moist.
That's it.
All right, that's a what we want to start out as many of you know, probably most of you know, Bert is an author who has written books, many, many books about racing. They are fictional books set in a mostly non-fictional world. This stuff really happened. And the series of books is called The Last Open Road. Bert, can you tell us what is the premise of The Last Open Road series of books?
Well, I'd been racing for a lot of years. I guess I did my first driver's school and race in 71. And I was a typical, I didn't have a large bag of gold to go racing with. And so most of my cars were pretty much crap. And I was not that great a mechanic because I was just learning that. I like became a mechanic on my way to becoming a race driver. And I started writing about the sport and covering events and so forth, including selling stories to Auto Week as a way to get my hobby for free. And I discovered my cars were kind of junk in the beginning. And I discovered that I could write my way into much better cars than I had and cars I could never afford. And so I was writing magazine stories and so forth, including for Auto Week. And I kind of hated all the fiction that I'd ever read or seen on the screen about racing. It didn't capture that world the way that I'd experienced it. The long nights in the garage, the problems that take your third or fourth time around to solve them. Then you finish up the car and my God, it's 3 a.m. and you still got to tow to the racetrack. So you hop in the car and tow it. And I loved the history, particularly the early 50s when really road racing was just starting in this country. And so I had this idea that I would tell the history of that era, but as a novel. So it's historical fiction, essentially. And initially, I was going to make the narrator as a driver. And then it occurred to me the drivers are all full of you-know-what, and they're so focused on their own lives, aspirations, disappointments, that they really have a very skewed view of the world. And I thought, why not pick somebody who's there, who's in the scene, but who's not a driver? And since I was already a mechanic, it seemed like a natural. So I dreamed up this mechanic, Buddy Palumbo, and initially he was only in place to tell the story, to tell the history that I wanted to tell. And I fleshed him out a little bit. I had him working at a Sinclair station in Passaic, New Jersey. As a Chicago guy, I had to put him on the East Coast because that were really there in California is where it all started, but mostly on the East Coast. And being a Chicago guy, I didn't have it in my heart to make him a New Yorker. So I put him across the Hudson River in Passaic, New Jersey, so that he and his acquaintances and friends could say rude things about New Yorkers. And so I wrote it, and it filled out. There's a crusty old guy that runs the gas station. There's another mechanic that works there, a black guy named Sylvester Jones, who be just a taciturn guy, was a tremendous, he was in the service during World War II. He could fix anything, but he'd been jammed socially and personally so many times. He's not a nice person. He really isn't, and he admits it. Well, he becomes one of Buddy's mentors. Another one is Big Ed Baumstein, who's a big, fat Jewish guy that owns a couple of scrap yards and always drove Cadillacs. And he sees a Jaguar XK120 at his country club. I got to have one of those. So he buys a Jag 120. And to be fair, Big Ed, wonderful character. But this is a guy that should never own a car with three pedals. He just, he can't do it. But he doesn't know that. So they wind up, there's a dealership in Manhattan, Westridge Motor Car Company Limited, which is the Jaguar MG dealer. It's run by this expat Brit named Cullen St. John, who's an absolute thief. And so all of this, I don't know where it came from, but the history kind of blossomed into a complete novel.
Yeah, because it's set, any of us who know about sports car racing in the 50s and 60s will recognize the tracks and the other drivers and the cars. It's a sort of a it's a fiction book set in a nonfiction world.
Yeah, right? It's historical fiction. I was describing it once on a radio show. I mean, not nearly this good a radio show.
I was describing it out.
And I said, imagine you wanted to do a history of the Civil War. And the way you did it was by inventing a fictitious foot soldier and have him be in all the battles and campaigns and marches exactly as they happened. And that's what I did, except my Civil War is early American sports car racing.
And where do you come in the story?
I'm sorry?
Where do you come in the story? Do you start in 1971 in the story?
Yeah, well, my next question was going to be, are you Buddy Palumbo, the hero of the story and the narrator?
Well, as my wife will attest, I'm not as nice a person as Buddy is. Nobody's as nice a person. He's been several reviewers, not car guy reviewers, but several literature reviewers, say he reminds them of Holden Caulfield in Catcher in the Rye, who's although I think Holden Caulfield's a little bit of a whiner, but that's just my own
take. Kind of perv, but okay.
But still, you're happy for a comparison like that. And it isn't just one reviewer. It was a couple of them that said that.
Nice.
You outlived J.D. Salinger, too, so you got that.
Yeah, but I was born later, so it's not that big a deal.
Let's not get, okay, it's like racing. You know, yeah, I won. That was my class victory, but, you know, just say I won, you know.
Hey, as Buddy says, by the time he becomes seasoned in the world of racing, it isn't how fast you are, it's who they put you in against.
So how many books have you got now?
All right, there's 7 novels in the Last Open Road series. The most recent one, the last 3 are like a highly fictionalized, I guess you could call it parody of Ford's attempt to buy Ferrari and Assault on Le Mans. But in my book, because I don't want to get sued, it's not Ford Motor Company, it's Fairway Motors.
Right.
Average cars for average people. I used the real history as the jumping off point for my imagination.
Okay. I was just going to say, we could have 9 books. We could go on a long time about that, but that's just one facet of the Bert Levy, oeuvre. Tell us one other thing that you do that you are famous for doing is you call yourself a ride mooch. So you take your riding ability and leverage that to find yourself in fantastic sports cars around some of the country's greatest road courses. How did you do that?
It beats the heck out of me. But I can tell you how it happened. I had been running my own cars. I was running that year, that was in 1984. I was running my only year in SCCA Nationals in a showroom stock Alfa Romeo Spider sponsored by, in part, by the dealership I worked for at the time selling cars. And we had Mercedes, Volkswagen, Alfa Romeo, and Rolls Royce. And it was right in downtown Chicago, right by Rush Street, which is a big nightclubbing area.
That's where Crane Communications is, Rush Street in Chicago.
And, yeah, I've met Keith a couple of times. He wouldn't have heard of me. But at any rate, I had won the August National at Road America and set a new lap record, which was eclipsed at the very next race up there. But not the point. I could be proud of it. And Joe Marchetti was a wonderful character. Joe Marchetti and his brothers ran an Italian restaurant in Chicago called the Como Inn, which was like the downtown Italian restaurant to go to. Everybody from aldermen and the mayor to gangsters to people celebrating a first communion or a bar mitzvah to opera fans that would eat there and then go to the opera. I mean, it was neat. And it had, his father and mother started it, and it had grown like Topsy from this little one-room storefront. And they kept adding rooms on. So it was like a labyrinth of these different rooms. And one of his brothers was a brilliant interior designer. And so each room is like its own motif, its own. So at any rate, on the side, Joe, who was the eldest brother, bought and sold Ferraris, used Ferraris in Exotica. And he had connections in Italy, which which angered the local Ferrari.
Michelle, is that actionable? Do we have to go back up and hit the erase button?
No, oh, God. We can keep going.
All right. You're on probation, Bert.
That's track one.
Sorry.
Listeners are clutching their pearls across Southern California.
We don't have any listeners that clutch their pearls. A greasy wrench, perhaps, but not pearls.
They're clutching their greasy wrenches. So there you were. So it's Chicago, and this guy, he gave you a car to race, but not just any car. What car was
the way,
it?
The way it happened, he wanted me to, he started the vintage races, July vintage races up at Road America. And he wanted me to write a piece for his program about a driver's eye view of Road America, which I did. Instead of writing me a check, he said, I'll get you a car to drive. And first he put me in a Porsche, and it kept breaking. That was at Road America. He said, I'll make it right. So he invited me down to the MIDI at Road Atlanta in April. And he gave me a short wheelbase 250 short wheelbase Berlinetta Ferrari coupe.
And those things are now, they're selling for like 20 million, right?
Oh, it's crazy. And what's neat is that car was the last true dual purpose car from anybody. You could drive it on the street, take it to the races, put tape numbers on the side, if it was an alloy body, a lightweight, and have a very good chance of winning the race. My dear friend, Denise McCluggage, late friend, had a 250, and she's a great writer and a great driver. She had a short wheelbase Berlinetta that, as she said in an interview, it's not just my most prized possession, it's my only possession. And she and a friend, she was also into jazz music. She and a friend named Alan Eager, who was a jazz saxophonist, took it down to Sebring and won the GT class, co-driving this little shoestring effort. And one of the first races I ever saw at Meadowdale, she was in the 250 GT, and Don Yanko and another guy were in the two fastest Corvettes in the Midwest, and they had a heck of a race. And I turn, it was my first race there, and I'm on the fences like this. And I turned to the guy next to me. I said, that guy in the Ferrari really knows how to drive. And he looked at me and said, that's not a guy. And at that stage of my development, that was a culture shock.
That was a shock, huh? So you just sort of snowballed after that. You got the greatest car you could imagine to drive, and then you just wound up getting into more and more cars, and What are some of the coolest of these great sports cars that you've driven?
Oh, geez. That's like, you know, of all the girls you've dated, which, you know, they all have their beauties. Some of them have their terrors. I think that my most recent book is largely about Lotus history and also Lotuses that I raced, only because Colin Chapman, the guy that designed the Lotuses, was a brilliant, but sometimes a little sideways kind of guy. And for whatever reason, you know, I always say Lotus owners fall into two categories, those that will never be without one and those that will never own another one. And the for some reason, I've had extremely good luck driving other people's Lotus cars.
All the Lotus cars would be your favorites of all the ones you've driven.
No, I don't. I probably.
Okay. I'm gonna suggest some that I think would be your favorite. Certainly that Ferrari you just mentioned.
Yeah.
You also got to drive the Ferrari bread van.
I love that car because of its, I mean, it was great to drive, although it smelled terrible of gas on the inside, which was not the car's fault. That was just the particular prep level it was at.
You know, that's kind of a sin to be that unprepared. You got to drive the first Chaparral.
Yeah. A guy that I had raced against for years driving. I was in a Lotus 17 that belonged to a attorney from Birmingham, Alabama.
We have to kind of skip over so many details because you have a lifetime of memory there, but we don't have a lifetime to.
At any rate, the guy that we were competing with for the championship was this 10-foot tall Canadian named Jack Backstrom, who also worked with R&M Auctions. And he called me up. He said, you know, I got the very first Chaparral. And we've restored it, and I want to test it, and I can't fit in it. Do you want to be the test driver? And I said, oh, that's a great deal. He said, well, we'll fly you up, and I'll put you up. And he said, make sure to, when you write the story, to say that it's definitely not for sale. And, of course, now I understand what it is. He's trying to drive the price up by telling everybody it's that. But it was a wonderful experience.
And you also got to drive a UOP Shadow and half of the original Corvette Grand Sports. A whole bunch of stuff. This is all, folks, if you're just joining us, this is Bert B.S. Levy, an author, a raconteur, a racer, and a famous ride mooch. And we are going over some of his greatest cars, but unfortunately we could devote all day to this, but Bert, we have run out of time. But tell people where they can get all of these fabulous books that you've written, as well as the audiobook. Where do they go to get these?
Okay, you can buy them online from all the usual suspects, but I much prefer if you buy from my website, lastopenroad.com. And I will sign them for you, and we will include one of our famous decals with every book. And
you have license plate frames available too.
Yeah,
say last
license plate frames. We have
that.
We got
that separates you from everybody else on the floor.
The one I'm wearing right now.
There you go.
We've sold about 50,000 copies of the first book. I mean, that's over 30 years. And probably 250,000 of the decals. If you come to Road America or Watkins Glen, you'll see our stickers all over the paddock and parking lot. And they're just people that like the books and like the logo.
It really sets you apart on the freeway. I know that when I see one of those Last Open Road things, I just want to stop and talk to the guy. But anyway, Bert B.S. Levy, pronounced Levy, not Levy. You are welcome back on the show anytime you want. Maybe your next book you can come back on. Lastopenroad.com. Buy all of his books and buy the audiobook too, so that you can listen to it while you drive in your car that has the Last Open Road license plate frame on it. Bert, thank you so much for coming on. I'm going to have to unceremoniously, it says remove here on this control thing. So you're going off into the ether.
Heather's thrown out of better joints than this.
I doubt it. Okay. Thanks, Bert. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that was Bert B.S. Levy, whom everybody has known, a longtime writer. He covered a lot of races for Auto Week. And in fact, I think you could probably credit him with making vintage racing. You know, he played a part in making vintage racing what it is, kind of a big deal. There were, of course, a lot of people involved in that. But his stories about it certainly made it into a big deal. And so go to lastopenroad.com and buy some of his stuff. Michelle, I expect you to buy at least one of those books.
Yes, I'm intrigued. I love racing of all kinds, and I am very intrigued by historical fiction. So I will definitely take a gander at those books.
It is good stuff. And there's even, I think in the first book, there's sort of a love story angle to it. I'm probably misremembering it. But anyway, they're all good books, and we recommend them here on The Car Show, where you get all your information, 90.7 KPFK FM. We're going to move on. Carl Brower is still floating out in the ether somewhere. Carl, if you can hear us, signal us somehow. Satellite.
Come on.
Yeah, bat signal, something. We don't know where Carl is. He's gone. Maybe next week we'll hold a memorial for him.
Well, yeah, we got to find out what happened to him, but we must carry on, Mark.
We must carry on. We must be strong. Michelle, what do you say we dive into just some quick calendar items here?
Great. Yeah, it's kind of slow this time of year, but let's go for it.
Yeah, because the beginning of the year, I think, is a good time to remind everybody about these things that happen every single week. And they are car events. I think I've been to all of them that we're going to recommend here in just a second, all but one. And they happen every week. Like I said, Altadena Cars and Coffee every Saturday, 8 a.m. And of course, Altadena was the neighborhood devastated by the fires 1 year ago. And the survivors of those fires and the cars that they love come together every Saturday at 8 a.m. at 749 East Altadena Drive. You missed it today. That was they've already packed up and moved away for today, but it's a very friendly event and a lot of good people there. Altadena Cars and Coffee every Saturday at 8 a.m., 749 East Altadena Drive. Also every Saturday down in Michelle's neck of the woods, Donut Derelicts. Michelle, have you been to Donut Derelicts?
Well, yeah, Donut Derelicts has been around forever. And this is heavy on classic cars. So we're talking mostly American. But, I would show up in something before, I'd say, 1990 and feel very comfortable. After that, probably not so much. But it's every Saturday, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. This starts early at the Adams Avenue Donut Shop, Magnolia and Adams.
Magnolia and Adams, 6 to 9 a.m. every, what did we say, Saturday?
Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Every Saturday. 9 a.m. Up in the northern part of SoCal, Early Rodders. It's a fun show. It takes place at United Artists Theater, 1919 Verdugo Boulevard from 6 to 9 a.m. That's right where the 2 and the 210 collide. Mm-hmm. That one's a fun one. And of course, if you want traditional old school cruise-ins, every Friday from 4 to 10 p.m., Bob's Big Boy in Burbank hosts Southern California's best classic car show, they say, with all humility. Ooh. Their address is 4211 West Riverside Drive in Burbank.
And that's the original.
Is that the original Bob's Big Boy?
I believe so. Oh. I believe so. It's still, in its finest livery from the 50s when it was built. And it's awesome. Obviously, the food's very good, too. But, you can show anything there, by the way. My friend who has an RX-7 shows his RX-7 there all the time.
And people get there really early. I was there back when our good friend Alex Exidius and I used to have breakfast all the time. There would be a guy there with, I think it was a black Mustang. He got there, hours ahead and just sat there with a good spot.
To get a good spot. Yeah, that's what you got to do.
Bob's Big Boy.
Yeah. Friday night.
Show.
Friday.
That's every Friday, 4 to 10 p.m. Yep. At 4211 West Riverside Drive in Burbank. And in the other end of the valley, also every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m., is Valley Cruise Night at Foster's Freeze, 201 South Glen Oaks Boulevard in Burbank. Michelle, there's something coming up very soon, in a few weeks.
Yes.
At El Pete. What's going on?
El Pete, we need to know about this. If you are a British car fanatic or if you own one and want to cruise, you've got to go to the Peterson Automotive Museum on Sunday, January 25th at 9 a.m. because they're going to have a distinguished British cruise-in. And they have to get a ticket, even if you're going to show, or just spectate. So go to peterson.org for that. The Peterson is promising on this that they're going to have the best of motoring from across the pond, from elegant classics to spirited modern icons. And these will all be on the museum's rooftop. And they're going to have morning tea and awards. And this is promised to be a jolly good time for enthusiasts and Anglophiles alike. Pip, pip, cheerio. And we'll see.
What are they going to do about the oil leaks? Do they have they address that?
Have they put a tarp over the entire roof?
Have they notified the EPA? Well, there is no more EPA, so, you know, leak all the oil you want.
Well, yeah, this is an issue. We're just joking around, of course, because...
Of course we are. Anyway, moving along, Grand National Roadster Show, January 30th to February 1st at the Fairplex in Pomona. Get your tickets at rodshows.com, rodshows.com. Mm-hmm. We're hoping to have John Buck on before that takes
place. Yes, yes. We had him last year, I believe.
Yeah, we've had him every year. He's a tradition. King of the Hammers, January 22nd to February 7th. If you do not have enough dirt and dust in your nose and your ears, you want to go out to this. It is a fiberglass paradise of fifth wheel trailers and all kinds of crazy, wacky, rock crawling, dirt bike, everything. It's just everything. It's an amazing thing. It happens over the course of like about 2 weeks. Starts with the King of the Motos, January 22nd to 25th, and then the UTV race, February 5th. Every Man Challenge, February 6th, and on February 7th is the main event, the Race of Kings. Mm-hmm. And that's for cars. They go blasting across the desert from one mountain to the other. And when they get to the mountain, they drive them up these very steep boulder-strewn gullies. It's an amazing thing to see. So that's King of the Hammers out in Johnson Valley, OHV Recreation Area in the Mojave Desert, January 22nd to February 7th. The big event is February 7th. And then, of course, the Ferrari Club's Enzo Cruise-In, February 22nd. That's way out in the future. So mm-hmm. Put that on your book. That's going to be at the Autry Museum. Used to be at the Peterson, but they had a falling out.
Yes.
Scandal.
Now at the Autry. Yes. Escandalo. So you have to get your go onto the Autry Museum website to check out details on that.
Check that out. So we're moving along because we're out of, or we don't have as much time as usual.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Slam here.
News section. What's that? Yeah, news. Let me start out, Michelle, with this. With all this rain and crazy stuff, the most up-to-date information that I have right now, according to Caltrans and other sources, Highway 2, Angeles Crest Highway, is open to Newcomb's Ranch as of, you know, last time I checked, which was not long ago. But it is closed 3.3 miles east of Newcomb's all the way to Wrightwood. Yeah. And speaking of Wrightwood, I think we still want to say don't go to Wrightwood because they're digging out and it's
still a mess. They need some time.
Yeah, they need some time. They don't need you going around, hey, is there snow for my kids to – don't go to Wrightwood.
No, just go to Big Bear.
Yeah, go to Big Bear.
Go to Big Bear. It's right there.
Topanga Canyon Boulevard in Malibu is open, but only during the day from 5 a.m. to midnight, and major restrictions even then. Mm-hmm. So they're doing emergency repairs to landslides, and there's a one-way traffic section with pilot cars and 25-mile-per-hour speed limit and work zones. It's typically closed overnight. Decker Canyon, Mulholland, both open as far as we know, including that new stretch just past the Rock Store. But there is a police presence, so don't do anything dumb. Highway 1, PCH, is open, as far as we know, all the way up to, you know, just south of Big Sur, where it is still closed. And if you're going to Mammoth to go skiing, bring chains, because they're requiring chains 25 miles south of the Highway 203 that goes up to Mammoth off of Highway 395. So if you're going up there, bring chains and know how to put them on.
Yes. Oh, do not just pull over to the side of the road and start trying to put them on. Oh, my goodness.
There's usually guys sitting there ready to help you for a fee. So keep that in mind.
Right.
Highway 243 to Idlewild is open. Highway 73 to Palms is open. And now we go to the legal section of our news. And I'm going to turn it over to our legal coordinator, Michelle Spencer. Michelle.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Okay. There are several things you need to be aware of if you're going to be driving around in California starting as of January 1st of this year. First of all, freeway drivers over 100 miles an hour, if you get a citation from the CHP for excessive speed, there's a new program that just started called FAST. And is that lost on you, Mark? What does it mean? It means forwarded actions for speeding tickets. And this program is going to allow CHP to directly advise DMV of this ticket that you've gotten for over 100 miles per hour. And the DMV can quickly decide whether to suspend your license or revoke it. And this is, even if you have a clean record, you don't get a hearing. it's not good, you guys. This is designed to expedite DMV handling of licensing and suspensions per its driver safety branch. Now, as a lawyer, is this concerning that you don't get a hearing? Yes. However, we have to remember that the licensing part of the state programs is not a constitutional right. So they can do
this. It's a privilege. Driving is a privilege.
Right. It is not a right. It's a privilege. Correct, Mark. You read your driver's handbook. Yeah, so they can do this. And this is alarming.
Is there a hearing or something?
No, this the whole problem, Mark, is that there used to be a hearing. You used to be able to say, oh, Your Honor, this ticket was given to me and I wasn't even driving, for example.
No.
Or, you know, this ticket was given and I was in Utah at the time or something like that.
My dog ate my homework, something.
Right. So the problem is, so if you get this suspension and you have a legitimate defense, you're going to have to get a lawyer and they're going to have to try to pull something for you so you get a hearing at the DMV and contest it.
It won't survive a couple of court challenges, right?
It will survive court challenges, but what's going to get annoying is that the state's going to have to be spending money to defend against those kinds of claims. See? So this is the law of unintended consequences, because people are going to have to sue to get their license back.
Now,
and then the state will have to pay the DMV lawyers to handle this.
The thing is, I don't know. Of course, most people who go that fast are knuckleheads. And maybe they deserve some kind of, we don't want dangerous drivers out there.
Exactly.
But if you're in the middle of the desert on an empty road on a clear sunny day where the road is straight and you just want to gun it for a second, I don't think that deserves being losing your license for that. I'm sure that there are a lot of situations where it does deserve a revocation of your driving privilege. But
right. And that's the kind of situation where I would say get a lawyer and contest it and let the judge say this is unreasonable.
All right.
And so FYI on that. And good luck if you get ticketed.
Yeah. So be careful.
Yeah.
Going 100 miles an hour.
And also, P.S., this is only on the freeways. And I don't want to encourage driving this fast on the streets, but it's only a CHP citation.
So if I'm going 100 miles an hour and it's in a parking garage, I'm okay. I'm in
there.
Yeah. All right. Good. I'm glad to hear that. Several other laws coming up that I just looked up. I found these carscoops.com, put them all together. And so I'll just fire them off here. Radar or laser-based speed safety systems in highway work zones are now in place under a new pilot program. These systems can photograph license plates and issue citations directly to registered owners. Now, you should not be speeding in a work zone.
Yeah.
See if, you know, there are workers there, for goodness sake. Slow down.
Right.
They're knucklehead.
Right. That's what do they say? Beware of the cone zone. And you
slow
know, maybe
cone zone.
Maybe this is something that we needed.
Yeah, that would be good. Maybe. Let's see. Caltrans will now be allowed. This is a second, another law. Caltrans will be allowed to lower posted highway speeds by 5 miles per hour with warning citations issued during the first 30 days in school zones. Local authorities can reduce speed limits from 25 to 20 miles an hour. I guess sounds reasonable. But
yeah, so that one, FYI on that one, is nothing has been done yet on that. So the school speed limit is still 25. However, we need to be careful because our local authorities, which means your city, or if you're in an unincorporated area, your county, could order an ordinance change to reduce that. Okay. So you just have to be mindful that sometime during the year, your local city could change that.
Okay. You shouldn't be speeding through a school zone. That's another, I don't see anybody who's going to come out and say, no, man, I want to go. I want to get my 100-mile-an-hour ticket in a school zone. No.
No, but this is because some cities think that 25 is too high. And so they lobbied and Sacramento went ahead and said, okay, fine. You guys can have your own discretion depending on your circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. Another law, drivers are now required to move over or slow down for any stationary vehicle displaying hazard lights or warning devices, not just emergency responders.
Oh, yes.
These are cars. You're driving down the highway. Somebody's on the side of the road, stopped. And I thought it was just 18-wheelers that had to change lanes to go around, give them one lane berth for the parked vehicle. But now apparently that's not the case, right?
No. And you used to have to pull over or slow down for anything in that far right area. Now, if the vehicle is stopped and has their hazards on, you have to go over 3 feet away. Okay, it's 3 feet. That's the rule.
Okay. 3 feet.
All right.
That's for bicyclists too.
Yes, exactly. So this was expanded.
Yeah. So keep that in mind. I think my own opinion is that making an 18-wheeler do that on a 2-lane highway for every single stopped anything is more dangerous than just going past it. Obviously, if somebody's out there changing their tire and their left leg is sticking in the lane, yes.
Right.
But if they're just parked and they're not in the way, I think it's more dangerous for it to.
Yeah. Same with if there's a Peloton on a country road and they have
Peloton.
Yes.
But yeah, but I am just one voice crying out on 116,000-watt radio station. So maybe someone will change it. I don't know. Okay. And we have two more.
Yep.
Those cursed e-bikes. They are the things we all love to hate now. It's like Marlon Brando and the Wild One, except now it's a 14-year-old in Newport Beach on an e-bike. Exact same character.
Yep.
E-bikes must now display a red reflector. What? I thought the whole problem with e-bikes was the morons riding them.
Well, that is.
On the bike path at 1,000 miles an hour. Now they know that our government is saying you have to have a red.
You have to have a red reflector and then you'll become safe.
Well, that's right. You know, that's a reason to stop them and ticket them. Maybe they'll learn, right?
No.
Okay. Autonomous vehicle manufacturers won't escape scrutiny. Once DMV regulations are finalized, police will be able to issue formal notices non-compliance directly to AV makers, autonomous vehicle makers, by July 1st. So those fully driverless vehicles must include two-way communication systems for first responders too. Right, cool. Michelle? Sound good?
I never heard of this, but that is really crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, right now, if you're Zook or whatever, Waymo is doing something wacky in the parking garage in the middle of the intersection, who gets the ticket for that?
Right.
Right now it's going to be Waymo starting July.
Okay. Well, it should, they should be controlling their vehicles, right?
Somebody
has to. And then last but not least is if you're in the market for buying a used vehicle, that you have a new consumer protection in California. courtesy of amended Civil Code Section 1784.20. Stuff that only a lawyer can enjoy, right? All right. So this is if you go and buy or lease a used vehicle from a California dealer, you can return it for no questions asked within 3 days of signing your deal. And this is the first one in the country that allows this to happen. So no other states have this. And the only qualifier here is the sale price has to be under $50,000. So this won't happen when you go buy your new Porsche or your Ferrari. unless you can get it under unless it's $49,999 for that to apply. And you can't put more than 250 miles on the car in the 3 days.
Okay.
So, all right. And this is, there's just some other things added into that require dealers to advise all the buyers or lessees of hidden costs. The state does not like these hidden costs that a lot of used car dealers tack on. So this is supposed to be more of a disclosure of fees and things that would go into the purchase. Okay. So, but this does not go into effect immediately. It goes into effect on October 1st, which is strange because it's way the heck out there, but it's also extremely unusual. And usually they only go into effect January 1st and July 1st. But this law actually started, it was signed by the governor in October a year ago, and they wanted a full year to get up to speed and train the people at the used car dealerships. So they got a waiver. So it's October 1st.
Okay, good. And that's all the news for this week. Now we are gonna, well, our review section was gonna start out with Carl and I discussing the Ducati Panigale V2, but as we said, Carl is out wandering around on the freeway, probably right now, cars dodging around him. We don't know, where he is or what he's doing, but if you, again, if you see him, just, wave him down, you know,
hello,
get him off of the freeway, whatever it takes. But I just drove the Nissan Leaf. We haven't done the Nissan Leaf, have we, Michelle?
No.
Okay. As you know, it's an all new Leaf. Now, the one that I had this gaudy color. It's a blue. It's like the bottom of your swimming pool in the 1960s blue. It just doesn't. The blue is not an attractive color on it. But thankfully. And that's the one that they chose for all their publicity pictures. So if you're looking up, like if you go to autoweek.com, which you should do right now and type in Nissan Leaf, you'll see the blue color. And that's the only color they gave us, you know.
But they do come in other colors, right?
They do come in other colors, yes. Okay. Much nicer colors. So this is the new third generation Nissan Leaf. And the first thing everybody wants to know is how far does it go on a charge?
Yes.
303 miles.
Okay.
That is fully acceptable, I think. I think I would say 300 miles is the minimum for people to take electric cars seriously. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think that that's what a consumer going in to any EV is going to want to have is at least 300. I think that's become the standard. I mean, if something comes in at 200 or 250, that's too low for nowadays.
Okay. Yeah. And I, you know, they, like we were considering buying a Volkswagen ID. Buzz. And one of the reasons that we're not buying it is that range is well under 300 miles on that car. It's I think 217 with all wheel drive and 230 something with rear wheel drive. And of course the price on that is killing them.
It's astronomical.
Yeah. It starts at 65,000. I mean, you're supposed to be a hacky sack playing hippie and buying these things. And you know, this is, I think they misjudged the American market.
Yeah. And that's why they're skipping that model. You're not going to sell any for model year 2026, right?
Well, they have so many that they don't have to really. And so I assume that there are prices involved in certifying a model year of a car. And so Volkswagen is skipping the 2026 model year, but they're also going to bring the 2027 model year up a little bit early, but I guess they have too many on dealer lots. My local dealer, I drive by every day and there's a bunch of them there. It's not like acres and acres of ID buzzes, but it is a lot. The sales, I think, if I'm not mistaken, sales are a little over 6,000 since the thing came out. Oh. It's been over a year. It's been on sale over a year, but they had two drastic recalls on it. One was because the rear seat was too wide or some dumb thing like that. It was so wide that the EPA or DOT said that it constituted a 3-passenger seat.
That's
so
right.
They had to redesign the whole thing. And our buddy Jack Walsworth told us that whole story.
That's right.
But so that is the ID Buzz. But I had the Nissan Leaf, which, once you get over the color and just don't buy that color, it's actually a very comfortable car. There's a lot to like about it. Let's start out with what? Well, we said 303 miles of range on a charge. It'll hold up to 55.5 cubic feet of cargo. I think what they wanted to do was proportion it a little bit like an SUV, but without really fully going to an SUV. It looks more like maybe a hatchback or something. Ooh. It is powered by a 75 kilowatt hour liquid cooled lithium ion battery. And
can I ask a question?
Yes.
Didn't they change the charge ports? Because you used to have just the one in the very front. That was a horrible design.
That's a good point. So what they have now, they have one charge port on each side in the back. So one is CCS and the other is NACS, North American Charging System, which is the Tesla system. So that's kind of clever.
That's an upgrade because then you could hit a Tesla station.
Right. Right. So it's very nicely done. I like that. It has, you can also get a smaller battery, 52 kilowatt hour battery with a 174 horsepower motor, which you wouldn't get quite the range, but still pretty good range. What else do I want to say about that? You have not driven it yet, Michelle, is that right?
No, I haven't. I have not. I know. Did it handle good? Did you see any difference between second gen and third?
Yeah. Well, now I own a second gen Nissan Leaf, and this one is much, much nicer. I don't like the look of it. I think it's just too, like I said, the proportions are all off, and I keep harping on the blue color. I don't know why that is even available.
It really irritated you.
It's stuck in my craw. I don't know where the craw is. You're a lawyer, not a doctor, so I don't expect you to know where.
We don't know where craws are. No.
Yeah. But it has an enhanced battery thermal management system. So, I think all in all, it sounds like a pretty good deal. It has a heat pump to, for onboard heating and air conditioning, very efficient system there, and it's just all around I was quite happy with it. Let's see if we can get price on this.
What's your pricing, and on your 303 range model, what is the horsepower?
Hang on, I will get you that.
Something around 200.
Okay, the pricing for it starts at under $30,000. $29,990. Now that usually means you have to pay like $1,400 or so for
destination. Destination.
So it's just a little bit over $30,000, which I think is an affordable car. I think it makes for an affordable car. If you get the S Plus and Platinum Plus trim levels, you're looking at $34,000 to $39,000. I want to make sure that we get all this stuff correct. Digging through my notes here, because I wrote a story on the intro of the Nissan Leaf. It's available at autoweek.com. Just say Autoweek Nissan Leaf in the Google search engine and you'll get it. Oh, here, destination charge $14,95. So it's a solid entry into the field. Like I say, if they would just have gone and made it look a little bit better. And I'm not talking about just the color, but I don't like the proportions of it. I think it just looks kind of goofy. But as a vehicle, as a daily transportation driver, as a family car, it's very efficient. I like it quite a bit.
Is it made in Japan?
Yes, it is. So that's going to be hurting them.
A tariff issue. Yeah. Well, and also we have our, of course, our EV rebates are gone. State of California, I'm still checking to see, Mark, whether or not we step up and try to bridge the gap a little bit with some funding.
I don't know. People. Where would they get the money for that?
Well, yeah, that's
just, aren't we in a deficit, right? And we don't have a surplus
in the state of California. Yeah, we did have a surplus.
We had one briefly.
We had one. And so maybe if we do have another surplus, this is something that could happen.
All right. I read somewhere that the Volkswagen ID Buzz was being offered. Volkswagen was offered $7,500 cash.
Yeah,
but
I saw that too.
I was not able to confirm that. Everybody at Volkswagen is away on vacation. So,
Possible. I did hear that possibility too. And it can't hurt to ask if you are in the market for one to ask the dealer.
That's right. That's right. Another interesting car that I drove recently was the Toyota RAV4 Wilderness. As you know, there are sort of wilderness style versions of what the Subaru Forester and the Honda, I think it's a CR-V. And the idea there is to make it a little bit more competent off-road. Now, the idea is basically the most important thing is that they put all-terrain tires on it, because so often people go out, they buy an SUV and they see all the ads of, you know, Daring Do out in the desert or wherever. And people think, oh, I'll just go out and explore the Mojave. Well, the Mojave is a pretty big place. I mean, it sort of filters all the way down into the Great Basin. And before you know it, you're in Utah. But the tires that you have on most SUVs are not made for going off road. They're made for being quiet and providing grip and providing high mileage and long life on pavement.
Yeah.
So the big thing that I liked about this Toyota RAV4 was it's actually called the Woodland, not the Wilderness. Excuse me.
Oh, Woodland. Okay.
And Wilderness is the other guys, the Subaru Wilderness.
Right.
But,
right.
So
the Forester.
It should be quite capable off-road. Now, I say it should be because I went to take it off-road. I was heading out into the Mojave last Sunday with our good buddy Mike Levine, and he had a Ford Raptor, and there were a couple of other Fords there, Bronco, Raptor R, and another guy with a Ford F-150 pickup truck. And so I was going to tail along in my RAV4. We're going out to look for petroglyphs, and there are plenty of petroglyphs out there, folks. They are there for you to look. It's just one of the many things that you can see out in the desert, and one of the many great reasons for going exploring. So I was on my way out there. We're all going to meet up at the Starbucks in Mojave, and the RAV4 made it out there. In fact, up until that point, I had been very satisfied with the Toyota RAV4. I was just sitting in it. I love the like elbow room. I think the EPA measures what they call shoulder room, but elbow room is a less well-defined measure. You've got all this width to the side of you. And I love the way that it drove. It was it had plenty of acceleration. It's, of course, a plug-in hybrid powertrain, up to 320 horsepower combined. It has all-wheel drive with a rear electric motor on the plug-in hybrid electric vehicle. It has level 3 DC fast charging, so you can get from 10% to 80% in about 30 minutes. There's an 11-kilowatt onboard charger, and you can even tow up to 3,500 pounds with this car. Now, I was really liking this car up until the point that I got out to the Starbucks in Mojave, at which time the tire inflation monitor went on and said, your right rear tire is losing air, drive straight to your Toyota dealer. Uh-huh. And so I got out and checked the tire pressure, and the tire pressure was fine, but I put more in anyway. I think it was 35, 36 PSI, and I added some. I got up to 38 PSI, but the warning still stayed on there. And we were about to head out into the trackless wilderness, and I thought it would not be responsible. It had a compact spare tire, I checked. And so I wound up parking it there and jumping into the Bronco. Which is like an ad for Ford.
Well, right. Yeah. Well, that's too bad, though, because sometimes those TPMS systems just fail. And
they could have just been that system. When I returned the Toyota, the guy said, oh, yeah, those things, they give you false warnings all the time.
Oh, crud.
So, you know, most